Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great. 2 minutes early. That is the Beth Laird way.
Episode 28, Beth Laird. Here we go. She is the head of Creative Nation, one of the largest independent publishing companies in Nashville. I'll tell you a quick story. When I first moved to town, I think I was here for like a week, and I remember seeing her and her husband, Luke Laird, and one of her writers, Barry Dean, speak on a panel in person. And I remember thinking, oh my God, if there was someone's brain that I would love to pick on the Nashville music industry, it would be Beth. And fast forward, we were able to make this happen. I was so excited to talk with her, and this was a great conversation. There were takeaways that I'm still looking into and reading and checking out. A wealth of knowledge in this episode. And if you want to learn about what is it like to run an independent publishing company, what do you have to risk? What do you have to put on the line to make it happen? If you want to know what it takes, this is your episode. Okay, I'm done talking because I'm so excited to get into it. I can't wait for you guys to hear this. Let's dive in. Episode 28, Beth Laird. Here we go.
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I really care about being on time and I try really hard. But I'm also really not good at time management. And so I always want to be on time, but then I'm, you know, I always have the best of intentions and think it's really important. But because once I get rolling in my day, things just change.
Oh, absolutely. I was on a Zooming yesterday with someone and I had sent the request and I got an email alert like 4 minutes early that they were online. And they were waiting for me. I was like, oh shoot, I gotta go. Like,
see, at least though, that's the thing. At least you do get the, like, you know, like the notification or whatever. So you're like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing. And I have a really great assistant who, she's like really helped me with this. It's actually been it's a goal of mine. I also have a business coach and we talk about this. I'm just not good at, I have to do less for longer periods of time, not more at short clips. Like I like moving fast, but I like real conversations and I can't kind of do that in these quick little like 15 minute meetings. I can't do that.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me really quickly, I was looking at your Instagram and it looked like last month you guys went on an RV trip.
Oh yeah.
I grew up in New York. I've never been camping. I have always kind of fantasized about an RV trip, which is weird. My family's never gone on one. No one, I don't think in my family, extended family, anyone has ever gone on an RV trip. And I've always thought maybe it's because of the movie RV with Robin Williams that I watched as a kid that I thought was a great movie. Maybe that's where it comes from. I've always wanted to go on an RV trip. Fill me in. Tell me what this is like.
First of all, I just have to say, I love New York. Literally, Luke and I love it. Like it's one of our great loves. If we can go anywhere to get away for a weekend, we just go. And I just love the culture and energy. And I'm really sad right now that we haven't been able to go. So I can't wait till we can go back. So just had to put that in there.
Do you guys see theater? Are you guys theater people?
Yes, but that's not even the main reason we go. Like we do enjoy doing that. It's just something about the city we love. Like we just love it. It's just our favorite. So anyway, even you mentioning it, I the other day was telling Luke, I'm just like, oh, I can't wait till we can go back. So ready to go back. But okay, RV. Here's the thing. I'm not an RV person. I'm not a camping person. Luke is. Luke grew up camping. He loves outdoors. He bow hunts. He literally grew up on a dirt road called Laird Road, which is where his grandparents' farm was, and he could come home from school and go in his backyard and get in a tree stand. So that, you know, I'm from the South, and I thought, like, I'm from a small town, so I thought I was really from the country, and then I went to where he's from in Pennsylvania, and I was like, oh, wow, like, this is, like, really the country. I didn't even know, you know? So he's always been up for it. I have two sons. They are for sure up for it because mostly because they're obsessed with fire and you get to build a campfire. And so, I mean, that's kind of like where they are in life right now, you know?
The pyromaniac phase. The
Yeah. So what happened was my friend bought an RV and she has a house in Nashville in LA. And so she has been, they've been taking the RV, her husband and child, to go back and forth to their houses. And she's like, well, if we're going to be doing this and we're not flying during the pandemic, like, we might as well go see some things we've never seen and we might as well make this fun. So I'm someone who really likes a change of scenery. I really like to go on trips. And obviously during this time we couldn't. So I sat down, I'll never forget. I walked outside and I said to Luke, hey, would you ever be interested in an RV trip? And he was like, are you kidding me right now? You would actually go on an RV trip? And I'm like, well, I don't have another option. And I want to go on a trip. And so it's like he immediately saw the window. And so that was probably like on a Wednesday. By Sunday, actually, it's probably closer. It's probably like Friday. And by Sunday, we went out to an RV rental place. And I'm like a researcher. So I just want to know tons of information. So I went through and looked at all the ones, like what we could drive, blah, blah, blah. So we were touring all, like taking our kids, going up in all these different RVs at the sales place. Cause I was like, we need to at least see like what fits us. What could you actually drive? Cause we've never done this. So here's my synopsis. First of all, we stayed close, which I'm really glad for the first trip. We only went to two places. I will tell you, everyone on my staff, first team meeting back, they all looked at me over Zoom and they were like, so how'd your RV? Because all my friends said, you won't make it the whole time. All my staff was like, you're just not an RV camping person. First of all, they obviously don't know me very well, because if you tell me I can't do something, it really lights fire. That's the way I'm wired. So I was like, even if I hate it, I mean, I'm going to do it.
Gosh darn it.
Doing this full on. But I'm going to be honest. It was so much fun. Massive learning curve. I would only do it probably once a year. Like, we'll keep doing it, but it's a lot of work. I knew going into it, but like, I have a spreadsheet. I had to buy all this stuff I don't know anything about. I had to take videos because, you know, you have to know like all the hookups, like water hookup, sewage hookup, electricity.
Yeah, you don't want to mix up those.
Oh gosh, no.
Those hookups.
No. And just like, we had a slide out on one side where the bed was. So like, there's just all these little things that you have to know. Like if you go to the bathroom on there and then you drop in this tablet. I didn't know about any of this stuff. So I have two buckets in my garage now full of all of our camping gear that I'm like, anybody can come borrow anytime, but we'll definitely do it again. I think you should do it. I think everybody should do it because there's this whole subculture I didn't even know about until I got out there.
See, that's what's interesting to me. Like, these RVers.
Me too. So people were driving in these, like, obviously some places are like camping, tent camping. I'm not doing that. But
yeah, I can't do that.
That's not a vacation. Like, why would you do that yourself?
I feel like, even though I'm like younger, I feel like I have the worst back ever. Like, my back gets irritated so easily. I can't, like, I need like an act, which is like, I don't know. That's maybe crazy for me to say, but no. I can't sleep on the floor. I can't do it.
No, I don't have back problems and I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. But I will tell you where we stayed, because we had to stay where there were like hookups. People were rolling in like F-250s, massive trailer campers on the back, where they can open up the outside. They have a kitchen on the outside and the inside. Then they have this whole setup that looks like a house, like outside. Like, they start pulling out all their stuff and pulling like a golf cart. And they were rolling in, like, I was like, what is this? I don't even know about this. But what I realized is most of them, just that's all they do. And you can only stay, I guess, for like 30 days in one campsite. So they stay and then they move and then they stay. Most people were retired. A lot of vets that were retired that were doing it. It was fascinating. I will give you one tip, just so you know, though. Now I realize why they do pull because we wanted to drive it for the experience, and it was great for my boys. But once you stop and you get your whole camp set up, you can't drive, and the campgrounds are huge. So you one of the campgrounds I rented a golf cart. Like, they had golf carts, so that was great. But our first campsite, you couldn't. It was very much just like kind of old school camping campsite. And we didn't have a car, and we had our bikes, which we could ride our bikes everywhere we needed in our little campsite, but you couldn't go explore. And I never thought about that. So now I realize that's why people do that.
Bring the car. That's the...
Exactly. But see, I can't... We couldn't be driving an RV and pulling a car. I mean, no. I trust Luke a lot, but both of us would be very nervous about that.
I think that you should write a blog post about this or something.
Well, I thought about it, but I'm going to be honest. I'm like, where do I even write a blog post? What? And when do I have time for that? But I do have the spreadsheet that I'm willing to share with everyone because it was very helpful to me. Someone gave it to me. My friend who was going on an RV trip who owns a publicity company, it ended up, we both have two boys and we ended up going the same week and both of us had never done it before. So we started sharing all of our tips and Amazon links. And so that's how I have this whole list.
Unbelievable. Okay. If I do this, I will send you an email and I will get your list.
Send my list. It will be really helpful because there's a lot of stuff that you don't know about that would make it way easier.
I don't think there's anything I know about like that.
I didn't either. Okay. My friends were so great. And then I started realizing, wow, like some of my friends go real camping or they love this and they grew up doing this. And I never even knew that about them.
Yeah. By the way, does Luke bring a guitar everywhere he goes or does he bring his laptop? And is he always working on music? Is that what he brings?
He always brings his laptop. And if he has room, he brings a guitar. So he brought both with him. But if he can't have a guitar, he can, you know, you can do so much on your laptop now. But yeah, he's always like recording voice memos, writing titles. He's always like in the zone or very in tune to it, I think, you know. So there's a lot of more. He wakes up really early. He's an early riser. So he'll wake up and be out there drinking coffee, making beats in the morning.
I love it. As one does.
Yeah, yeah.
You always talk about, I've heard you talk a lot about the lengths you will go through to make sure your creatives are comfortable, down to the snacks and the real creamer, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, during COVID, you don't need to be laying out snacks, I guess, as often. Any hacks that you have found to make writers more comfortable when you can actually physically be with them?
Yes, because... You are 100% correct. It's a really big deal to me because I think that's how writers feel loved. And when they feel loved and taken care of and important, it helps them get in their zone. It helps them go in, you know, happy. And I love the snacks. We also take lunch orders during the day so that they don't have to stop and leave. And so one thing we're doing is, no one's really back in here yet, but we're doing all individually wrapped snacks from now on. So that's one thing we have changed. The second thing
is, do they get sent out? Do you send them?
Well, that's for in the office. So then what I've been doing is like every probably 4 to 8 weeks, something like that, I'm sending a gift to everyone. My staff and all of our writers. So the first thing I did, the first month I sent everyone flowers because I was like, hey, if you're going to be working from home, I want to just add something to like brighten up your home office. Then it was, what did I do? Oh, custom cookies. And then I did this, I found this water bottle that has like a Bluetooth speaker on the bottom. So I sent that to everyone. I'm trying to think of things that they can use, but that's also like kind of fun and that'll just brighten their day. One thing I did do, cause I was having a moment where I was just really sad. It's kind of like the moment where you realize, oh, we're not going to be back for a while. This isn't like a couple months.
Right.
And so I sat in our office and I made everyone these goodie bags and I just gave them like a Creative Nation cup and some sticky notes. And then all the snacks we have that they all love, I like put all the snacks in the bag. So I just, and I sent it and we like drove and delivered them, and then mailed them to our writers out of town. But I think for me that like those little things are just that like way for me to be like, hey, I know we can't be together, but you know, we're still thinking about you. We still care. And I'm just trying to like brighten their day a bit, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, is your house the house that all your friends, your kids' friends want to come to? Do you guys have the best snacks, I'm assuming? Like, I always had that one friend that had good snacks at their house, and I'd always want to hang at their house.
Yes, it's like the pantry, like you go in. Okay, so I think I did this not really realizing that, but for some reason, so we just moved into a new house last August, so we've been there like a year, and we love it, like love. It's perfect for my boys. We have land. And everybody does come to my house and I usually host all like my friends' birthdays and stuff like that. But I always have a lot of snacks in the pantry. I think unconsciously that's what I was doing. I wanted to be that house. And like my house was the house where people would come hang. Not necessarily because of the snacks, but I think there is something about that house that you all knew growing up where they had the best snacks. And so especially when my sister has three little kids. So when they come over, every time they leave, the whole thing is like they get to pick a snack for the road, for the way home, because I have the best snacks. And that does give me a sense of pride that they say that.
Tell me really quickly, like, what are your snacks? Like, what are the go-tos for you that you always have to have in the cupboard?
Like, well, my snacks that I would eat are the snacks that I have that my friends and kids eat. Which one?
Yours, I think.
Because I have a lot, but you know, my kids take up more space than mine.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking about you. Give me your snacks. Yeah, yeah. And then I'll move on.
My snacks are not exciting. My snacks are like raw, unsalted almonds.
That's what I eat. I've got bags of them over there.
I love them.
Not roasted and unsalted. Like, that's literally, and sometimes I order them wrong and they come salted and I don't eat them. I don't know what that is. I swear. Yeah.
Same with you, 100% on that. I love cheddar popcorn.
Okay, yeah.
Like, what's that brand? It's like Smart Food or Smart. You know what I'm talking about, though.
There's the classic black bag cheddar popcorn.
That's what I'm talking about.
That one is so good. So good.
So even yesterday, I realized I hadn't eaten lunch, but I had like a bunch of Zooms, like back to back to back.
Yeah.
And I realized I hadn't eaten lunch at like 2:00, but I was actually having an early dinner. And so I was like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what am I going to do? So then I'm like, oh, well, I'm just going to have snacks. So I literally had almonds and cheddar popcorn yesterday. Those are going to be always my go-to. Now, I also really love Cheez-Its. I try not to do that, but we have them here. And so that's a problem. And I will tell you the favorite snack in Creative Nation that is always gone is Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids. Okay, that's
gallons. You'd be disgusted if you knew how many Sour Patch Kids we went through.
Okay, if you're listening to this and you want to make a gift basket for Beth, you know what to put in. So going back for a minute, when you guys started Creative Nation, you were putting your own money on the line, and I've heard you say that everybody told you that was a crazy idea.
Yes.
If someone came to you now for advice on starting a publishing company, and they said, do I put my own money in or not? What would you tell them? Obviously, we know how this story ends. But can you still say it was a good idea looking back?
That's a great question. Yes, I would say it really depends on what you're trying to do. So for us, it was a great idea. And I knew I wasn't trying to like blow up a big publishing company and turn it around for a quick sale. I was going to take calculated risks and grow slowly So I knew that if I planned it out, I wouldn't be spending a ton of money really quickly, which is what most publishers do, because you really need to like invest in copyrights to be able to obviously see a return. And publishing is such a long-term game. I mean, really long-term before you start seeing royalties and then you have an asset. So most people really need to start, like if you're going to have a staff, you have to really start investing in copyrights and having writers come in. I didn't want to do that. So I think for us, it was perfect because I knew I wanted to grow at this really slow growth rate. And my motto was, you know, like if I only have even Barry, Dean and Luke, but I do a really excellent job with them and people see what I'm doing for them and that it's different and they're talking to them and realizing they're happy and something's different, then I'll attract the other people, but I'll attract the right people. It won't be just, oh, there's a new publishing company. It'll be people who are like watching going like, wow, that's interesting. And I see how this is working. I want to kind of know about that. And that's really how we grew. So for us, it was great. I would say, see, that's just so hard because I think it just depends. If you were someone who wanted to slow roll like us and you really were more about quality and lifestyle and culture and team, I think it's fine to use your own money. But you have to be aware that it's a massive risk and you have to commit for 5 to 7 years and put the money in an account. It cannot be something that you're pulling out of your bank account for every year because it's going to take so long. People always start getting really nervous around year 3 or 4 because you're putting in more, but you're not seeing a return. And that's almost always when investors pull out. So if you want to do it that way, I would just suggest put it in an account, have a business plan, know it's a 5-year deal, and you wouldn't use the money for anything else. So it's not going to affect anything else you're doing to where you're going to even feel resentful that you're having to use this money for the publishing company. If you can't do that, I would say you should go get an investor. But you have to give up. That's the whole other side. It's like having a partner. It's like, what are you giving up? That's what I always felt like. What are you giving up for the money?
Hey everyone, thanks for listening and hope you're enjoying the show. Some of you may know that I run an industry newsletter called the Nashville Briefing. It really takes you to the front row of everything happening in our industry. And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to nashvillebriefing.com to subscribe. Also, if you're enjoying this show and specifically this episode, please feel free to give us a 5-star review on your podcast listening platform. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
Okay, so everyone who you bring on board, they have to take a DISC test. I'm really curious about this. How did you decide about on the DISC test versus any other test?
Well, I've taken like every one that there is. and when I started, I didn't know about DISC, and I did a Culture Index. I don't know if you've heard about that one, but that's what I started with. And really what happened was the business coach I was working with did Culture Index. And now the business coach I work with does DISC. DISC and Culture Index are very, very similar though. And that's why I like them the most. It's more about, here's kind of like a snapshot of this person. And here are their natural abilities. Instead of, there's a lot of other tests I've taken that either get super complicated or they're Enneagram or, you know, but I feel like that's based around different things. Like you could be a type 1 or type 2 and we both could be, but we could be in really different jobs and we could have really different skill sets. And so this is something that I love because it really drills down on the actual skill set and your communication style. And so for me, for team dynamics, I can't tell you how amazing it is. Like for my staff, for hiring, I DISC test everyone. And it's basically because I can say, hey, for this type of job, this is what I need. For instance, for an administration job, I need high details. I need, you know, a team player. Pretty much high details is one of the biggest things, but I don't have to have someone who is like an external communicator or someone who's like really great at talking and very social.
Right.
I want a plugger. I might be looking for the total opposite type of quality. So it kind of helps me set all of our people up for success, and they really appreciate it because I'm really matching their qualities with a job. So they love their job and I'm not hiring wrong. Which I feel like so many people in the music business do. It's like my buddy knows this person who recommends this person for this job. And it's like, well, you don't even know if they've ever done that job before or if they're even good at it. And the jobs I had in the beginning, I should have never been in charge of spreadsheets. I should have never been in charge of demo billing. I'm the lowest at details. I can do overall organization. I cannot do details. And that's where I feel like just matching people up helps me and helps them. And then we also test our writers so that we know the proper communication styles, or if we're trying to have a hard conversation and this person is really analytical, they're going to want someone who's very dry and leads with facts and figures. This person over here is very warm and fuzzy and hates facts and figures. So they're going to need more inspiration talk. And so I'm known for it more now. And it was very weird in the beginning. I will tell you, it's like creatives feel like, you're going to see they're crazy.
Or if something. They,
you know what I mean? Like if I take this and what's interesting is like, I've never had a test come out and been like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. What? Like, it's not like that. And like, there's no good or bad. It's just kind of like, here's your skill set. Here's how you communicate. And so it's been amazing for us.
Do you, on the hiring side, when you're using this kind of test, how often do you get it wrong? Or I imagine that the rate that you're letting people go is pretty small from creation, yeah. Right? It's like,
yeah. I mean, the only thing it's like you can't test for is
assholes.
Yes, which is my number one rule.
That's one of your big three. That's the
number one, no assholes. I feel like I can kind of tell if someone's an asshole if one of my things is Luke and I have a meal with them, because over a meal, I feel like you really get to know people. And you kind of know personality-wise, will this personality fit in our culture? And I've definitely made the decision after having a meal with someone, it just doesn't feel right, you know? Yeah, it just doesn't feel right. And even with writers, like there's a ton of writers that we love, that we work with, that we're friends with, but they wouldn't be right here. And it's not right for them either, you know? And that's fine too. Like I know I have a very specific style and culture, and I like that about it. And so you're attracted to it or you aren't, and that's okay, because really narrows in, and then we're more successful at staff and songwriters, because I feel like it's so narrowed in the beginning. It's like, this is who we are, this is what we're about, and starting that way, you know, is I just feel like you start in such a better way. I will also say, communication wise the last person I hired, I was able to say, hey, listen, when you come in, this is what is going to be the hardest part of your job. And here's the team you're going on. They're good at details. They are really good at buttoning things up. You aren't. And so you're going to be frustrated because you're going to want to dream and brainstorm. They're going to be frustrated because you're not just getting to the facts. That's why I'm putting you on the team. I don't need anyone else like them. We need one of you. And then I went to my team and I'm like, okay, this is why we're going to put her on the team.
Here's
She's
the deal.
Different than you. And I said, everything that frustrates you about me, she's going to do is going to frustrate you, because we're more similar profiles. And they're like, okay. And I'm like, so you need to give her grace in these areas. And she's aware, so she's going to really try to step up in those areas. But she's here because she's different. That's what's going to frustrate you, and that's why we're going to be a good team.
Does that diffuse anything out of the gate? Because now it's like I think once you kind of know that mentally,
Yes.
You get into less arguments, maybe, I would think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you come to realize, and my business coach has helped with this, is that every conflict you have, it's always just communication. It's always a difference in styles. And the best teams have really different styles on the team. You don't want one of all the same, but that is always where the conflict comes from. And almost, I mean, there's not been one single time where it hasn't been, oh, well, that's because you communicate like this. They communicate like this. This is where you guys are having the rub. This is where you're not seeing eye to eye. And so that's what's been very helpful for me, is that I can talk about it where it's not personal. It's like, I love you. You're on this team. We're great together. But I am always going to run at a faster pace. I'm always going to have lots of ideas. You are going to be more execute, methodical, button up the details. That's why we're good together. But I'm going to need to slow down and you're going to need to speed up.
And we'll meet in the middle.
Yeah. And that's what we do. And it's like, oh, that makes sense. You're frustrated with me because I'm on to the next idea and you're still finishing last idea.
Right. Totally. Now, I've heard you mention your business coach here and then a couple times in other places. How often do you talk with your business coach? Like once a week, every day, yeah. Once a month?
Yeah, like every week. But sometimes it might be more if there's like something big going on, or less if we're kind of doing well, but we always communicate through Basecamp. So we're constantly doing updates and talking through there. But I always wanted a business coach. And in the beginning, I worked with someone who did the Culture Index, but it wasn't really a business coach. And I met with a lot of different people and I talked to people, but no one got my business and no one got me. And they all thought it was super weird. And they were like, wait a minute, you're investing money, but you're not making money and you don't have monthly income and you can't invoice these people. And so it was like, people were so confused with my business, until I met him, and he loves working with creatives. So his whole thing is he likes doing more of the numbers, the CFO, the communication, team dynamics, and he loves just creative business owners. And so that has been wonderful for me, because the one thing I hate is every month getting the freaking spreadsheets and P&Ls and going through all of that. And he knows that. He knows, you know, but now I don't get anxiety about it because I can look at it, but I also know he's looking at it. And so he's not going to let me make any decisions where I'm going to fall off the cliff, or he's going to explain something that I don't understand, or he can give me a good summary overview. And so it just feels like, hey, I'm not great at this, so I'm going to put someone in this place who is, that I can trust. And that's been amazing. He's really helped me with my structure, and mostly he's really good too at really just challenging me.
How do you meet a business coach? Just like through the network or through the...
So I did this class called Catalyst through the Entrepreneur Center.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a few of us that stayed in a group. And so we have a forum and we've just like kept it for years and years. And we do a monthly forum together. It's all business owners. And we kind of like troubleshoot each other's businesses and help give advice. It's been great. One of the people in that forum was using him, and we try to do like a yearly workshop, kind of come together, do goals, everything. And so she said, I think we should bring in Chris for our yearly workshop. He's our business coach. We could all pay him, come in, and that's how I met him.
Very cool. Very cool.
And now he's working with a bunch of music business people.
All because of you.
Yeah, I love it. He's like, oh my gosh, I know so much more about... He didn't know anything about the music business.
Oh my God, I love it.
Yeah, so he's working with a bunch of people, which I love, because now he has like really different experiences. And I love that he works with non-music business people, because he'll say, why wouldn't you do this? Or why wouldn't you do this? And it's like, I don't know. That's just the way we've always done it. But we should try that. And this doesn't really make sense. It's just what we know.
Right. And one of my best mentors in Nashville is this guy who runs a tractor, truck, trailer insurance company. and he gives me great advice, like, because he's got no, like, biases, I guess.
Yeah, and, like, it's, like, a different perspective. It's kind of nice. Like, you know, when you're so far in it and you're trying to make decisions, it's really hard to kind of have that overview. And so right. I feel like sometimes I'll just get paralyzed by the decision because I'm like, okay, this is really important. It affects a lot of people, but I don't want it to just be just my opinion. That's where Luke's great too, because he's so just being creative and writing, so I can take business things to him and he'll be like, what about this? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that. But it's just having those people outside of your inner circle who can look at it from a different perspective.
Absolutely. Okay, so when Luke wins a Grammy in 2014, 2019, as his manager, did that make your job a little bit easier?
Yeah, I think, so like in general, when someone gets on a roll and they start having hits and getting awards, I feel like it's a really crucial time in their career. You're either the type that's gonna take off and really celebrate and not work as hard because you're giving yourself a little break because you've worked so hard to get there, or you're the type that's gonna double down during that time because you know there's a bunch of opportunities about to come your way. Luke is definitely a double down type, and I love that. And I also love working with writers who know this is an opportunity for me to go get, just go after some things and be proactive instead of just being reactive. Because after that, a lot of stuff is going to flow in. Not necessarily the stuff you need to be doing, just people right. that are like, oh, you won a Grammy or you had hits and like, we should write together. And that's one thing I think that makes us a little bit different, because we're really strategic. And we like to have strategic plans for each person based upon their preferences. So one thing I feel really confident about is when we're in that zone, our team is really good at knowing this is really important time. We're going to field any incoming requests, but we're going to go get a goal sheet and we're going to go after and be proactive after all of these things that we feel like is our time to go get them. And I think, you know, it's just easier to kind of sit back and celebrate and answer the phone. But that's the difference to me in the next run. Because by the time, you have to think, by the time you create, gets released, comes out on the radio, gets nominated, wins a Grammy. Yeah, you better have other things in the pipeline. It's been so long, you know, to get there. And so I think that that's one thing that we're all really mindful of, is like, we're going to celebrate and we're super happy, but also knowing like by the time that is done, we really have to be careful about setting things up and then not burning them out, because you are in such a high pressure time in a sense, to take advantage of these things, but not just flooding a calendar. Cause I've seen that a lot. People just get super overwhelmed and burn out. So making sure that you're picking quality, but that you also know every writer is different here too. Like how many days they write, when they need breaks, all the things. So you kind of know, like I know when I feel like Luke is going to get burned out, and I can see it ahead of time and be like, hey, he's traveling here. So when he's going on a bus, when he gets off that next day, he can't go straight in the writer room if he was on a bus writing through the weekend. We got to have this day off, you know, or this is coming into this season and we got to give him time to prepare for these writes, because these writes are really important and there's no time in here for him to get new ideas, that kind of stuff.
Right. When he wins in 2019, he's already an insanely established writer in Nashville and in the music industry. Did that win open up any other doors? That, like, did any opportunities come from that? Or is it
I mean, I think it's just, I think it's kind of like it just keeps you at the top of people's minds and it keeps you in the game. I don't think there was a lot of things that a lot of people Luke really wanted to write with that he hadn't written with yet. I think he was writing with his favorites and it was going well. But what that does is continue to kind of solidify in everybody's mind that you're not someone who's having hits and then going away or of the moment. It's really cool because Luke is someone I feel like that adapts and loves new music and loves new styles and new writers. And so it just shows like he can last, he can adapt, he's doing new stuff, he's reinventing himself. So then when these new artists come along, it's not the people really here that already know about him. It's more like, hey, these new artists are coming in and they weren't here in 2014, but now they're here. And so he's back on the forefront of making great music, and it just maybe gives them more of like, oh, wow, that's interesting. It wasn't just then, he's still doing this and he's still, you know, present. And I think that's mostly what it is more than anything. But I will tell you that win was really important to Luke because his first Grammy was for producing Kacey Musgraves' first album, and he loved it. Right. And that was the most fun ride with Kacey and Shane and Luke. I mean, it was incredible. It was so fun. I just can't even explain that how fun. I actually have a picture over here of them at the Grammys in my office. But
because were they like not at that point, I guess, I mean, jaded might not be the right word, but no. They like, it was still relatively new for them, right? Oh, like now it's like, well, it was Grammys.
It was the first album that Shane and Luke had produced.
Right.
I mean, it was, and it truly was like, she didn't have a record deal when they were making that music. And I had met her at BMI and introduced her to Luke when I was a rep at BMI. So it was really amazing. You know, it's kind of like we all were in this together. It was so fun, so fun. But he had always wanted to win a Grammy as a songwriter because obviously that's why he came to town and that's his first love. So when he won for Space Cowboy and for song, he actually started crying when he was accepting the speech. It was like, oh my gosh, like, why is this even happening? But, you know, as a kid dreaming in his bedroom, and writing songs since he was really little, like that's kind of the epitome for a songwriter. It's like your peer said you wrote the best song in country music that year, and that was really overwhelming, and it was a big deal.
Absolutely. Okay, so how do you meet Cassie Ashton?
Cassie, so my attorney was her attorney, and she had just played, what's that called? The Belmont Show?
The Belmont best Showcase, the Best of the Best. Yeah.
So she won the Country Showcase and she was in Best of the Best. And my attorney had reached out to me. He sent, he doesn't really send that much, but he sent, we're really close with him, and he sent me and Luke an email of a guitar vocal that she had done to try out or apply for Best of the Best because I guess they needed recorded music. He literally just said, oh my gosh, I heard this. She's about to take, labels are calling. She's about to start taking publisher meetings, all from Best of the Best. I heard this and thought of you. You have to listen to it. So Luke was driving home before me and he listened and he called me and he goes, hey, did you listen to that song? And I was like, no, I'm like, you know, just came in. He goes, stop, go listen to the song. Call me back. I'm like, okay.
Was it California, Missouri?
That one hadn't been written yet. She wrote that with Luke and Shane.
Oh, yeah.
It was Pretty Shiny Things.
Okay, yeah.
Literally her guitar vocal of that song. She's in college. I heard it and I was just like, holy shit. I mean, the voice, the delivery, the lyrics, I couldn't believe it. So we just called Austin. We're like, we have to meet her. We have to meet her. So she comes in, Cassie's, you know, like really big personality self, and we meet, fall in love with her. Luke in the meeting is so excited. Luke is like very even keel, very laid back, like doesn't get super depressed, doesn't get super excited. It's just kind of like this in life. It's really good for me because I'm like, He cannot even stand it in the meeting. He's looking at me like he's about to bust out and just say like, we want to sign you here. And I'm like, chill, just chill. Like it's the first meeting. But he was so excited that even after the meeting, he was like, let's like go down to the coffee shop. Let's like get coffee. Let's like talk about this. And like, I mean, there's some people where you're like, this is the perfect fit. I see the path for you. And for her, it was, Luke and I both had it instantly. It was, she she comes as a full package, obviously. But I also knew that, like, she is so creative that she needs space to create. She cannot be someone who is forced into anything. If you will listen to her, she will have all the ideas. She'll do all the work for you, essentially. But in our systems, that's not really the norm a lot of times for people in the music business. It's like, okay, now you're going to write a single. Now you're going to go take this photo. Now we're going to, and she's right. going to say, I want the photos to look like this. And here's my vision board. And here's my Pinterest link. And I'm going to do my own artwork in Photoshop. And I'm going to have everything for my video written out. And I'm going to know what they look like. And then I'm going to tell my story in this song. And I know how I want it to sound. And that's what's, to me, that's the genius of her and the beauty. But in system, sometimes that can be hard. And so I think, like, I knew she just needs space and time for a minute to creatively align with this is who I am and this is what I do.
You kind of just answered it right there. But with someone like you, like with she seems so undeniable. Like, it's a matter of when, yes. not if.
And I then, totally agree.
And it hasn't been, it maybe feels like it's been a couple of years, but in the scheme of, like, you know, artists, you know, it's still relatively new. But do you, like, get frustrated that you're like, why can this move faster? Like, what's the holdup, people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's undeniable. I 100% think it's when, not if. But I also knew, I mean, we kind of talked about it, you know, she gets frustrated because she, you know, really wants to be on stage and she wants to be touring and she wants to be playing more and doing more and all that. But at the same time, like, the thing that's amazing about Cassie, she's really smart. And we talked about it in the beginning. I'm like, okay, there's kind of two paths. You know, we can go try to get you a record deal. We can try to go straight to radio, throw it at the wall, see what happens. Or you can take time, because she was coming out of college. We signed her. She was still in college. It's like, you can take a second. You can write and find yourself, and you can do music that's really meaningful to you and kind of craft this and really work on finding, like, your fans and your demographic and your sound. And that's what she really wanted. She was like, I can't ever do music that isn't really me, and I can't rush anything. I'm just not wired that way. So I said, okay, well, we're going to take a little bit of a different path. And you're going to watch a lot of people come in and go this other path. And you're going to go, why this? But I'm going to remind you that we chose this path and why we chose this path. And she's been great about it. And I'll remind her and she'll be like, no, you're right. And so I think, you know, we've really laid out, like, this is how we're going to release. This is how we're going to tour. This is how we're going to build. We're going to do strategic partnerships. And now we have songs that are radio ready. But instead of just saying, I need a single, it's like, be who you are and create the art you want, and we will get there, and something will align that will get played on the radio. So yes, I want it to happen fast, but I also I'm always in it for a challenge in the long haul. And if it's a true artist that needs to build and develop and lay that groundwork, and she didn't want one song out for a whole year. She wanted to be able to tell her story through her music. So I love it. I mean, it's so fulfilling for me.
And the other lesson is, be careful what you commit to around Beth, because she will hold you to it. She will make sure.
And you could ask Cassie about that. She will say, like, hey, what about this? And I'm like, don't compare. They're going here. We're going here. You know?
Do you, I'm curious, because I've heard you also talk about how you make everyone fill the goal sheets out every year. Mm-hmm. Do you get eye rolls from that, or do people look forward to it?
Everybody is a big eye roll when they have to do it. When we set up their goal meeting in the calendar and we say, you know, here's a goal sheet and you have to have it filled out. It's like, oh, but everyone is grateful and loves it after they fill it out. And I understand that, because I feel the same way. I mean, even for my own goal meeting with my business coach, I want to wait till the last minute. I don't want to do it. I mean, it's just hard. It's really hard to write down your goals, and it's really intimidating because you don't want to fail. And you have to sit down and actually think about, what do I want? That's hard. I mean, it seems so simple, but we also challenge everybody on their goals. So it's not like you kind of just put some things on the page. It's like what we do is we print their goal sheets and we all the creatives have them on their desk. And we go back and reference them because they all have different dream co-writes or different goals they want. And we want to make sure that we're on track for their goals. So they're pointing the ship and they're telling us which way to go. So if you do bad goals, you know,
that's on you.
Yeah. It's like, okay, no, this is not. And we've changed them before. It's like, this is not really your goal. You might've been tired and you needed to just fill out the paper, but everybody's always super grateful about it. And it's been so nice because we're all on the same page. And I will tell you, like, you would think every writer's goal is the same, but it's not. And the things that are important to people, a lot of times are little things that you just wouldn't think that are like nostalgic for them growing up.
How in depth do you, like, is it like three goals, we're good to go? Is it a full page? Like,
I'll email you once you can see it, but it's, our staff goal sheets are different than our writer goal sheets, but it's like, five goals and there's like a long-term goal and then a focus for the year. So, there's also like, a place where you guesstimate your cuts, releases, and singles that you want. And then there's like your, regular co-writes that you love and then your dream co-writes. And then like records to focus on that you want to go, that you really want to get on. And so, the biggest thing for us is the focus of the year. And it's like somebody's focus could literally be like, this year I'm focused on country radio. I want to write hits. I want to be on the radio. Someone else's focus could be like, I want to be proud of every song I write, regardless if it gets recorded. I'm going to focus on being a great writer and mastering my craft. Someone else could be like, I want to win a Grammy. Someone else could be like, I want to sing my songs on tour. Or, I mean, it's really interesting. And sometimes it might even be just like a goal of getting on a certain record, you know. But just knowing like, here is my focus for this year. Next year it's going to change, but this year. And so then I can say when they're like, oh gosh, like all these opportunities came up and I'm not sure which one to choose for this person.
You can reference the goal sheet.
Yeah, because they're kind of going to lean on us and going like, I don't know, these are all good opportunities. I'm not really sure what to do. It's like, okay, well, what's their focus for this year? You know, it's different if they're writing just to get a single on the radio or if they're writing because they want to write song of the year and they want to master their craft. It might be a different choice.
Does Luke put down at some point that he wants to get a George Strait cut?
Oh yeah. I mean, Luke is, that's been like, so he got a George Strait cut. Was that last year?
It felt like last year. I have no sense of time anymore, but it felt like last year.
Okay, so it was last year or the year before.
We'll just say it.
Okay, it was last year. It's always been his number one. And I will tell you, one of the main reasons it was is because we could call his mom. His mom and dad are so supportive. And he could call his mom and say, Mom, I got an Eric Church single. Or Mom, I have a number one with Carrie Underwood or whatever. And she's always like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. What about George Strait? And it's like her number one. So he wanted it as much for her as himself. So the fact that he got a George Strait cut with his two favorite co-writers that are best friends that write here on a song that is one of his favorite songs that they thought no one else would cut but George Strait. I mean, it couldn't have been more perfect. They were like little kids, like giddy about that song and that cut. It like changed everything. They were like, we don't care if it makes a penny. We do not care. We have arrived.
That is the coolest thing. I mean, just to hear his voice on a record is like, is insane.
The best. I mean, he's the best, you know?
He's the best. And it's crazy. And it's funny because I remember growing up in New York where none of my friends knew who George Strait was. And yeah. Garth Brooks too, which I always thought was, and then because I got into country music and I would watch these videos, and I'd be like, holy crap, who are these people? But they're playing in like stadiums and arenas. And then as soon as you leave like my, you know, New York City,
Oh.
Everybody knows who they are. But I always thought that was interesting growing up, that like in my,
it's like
in
everybody
New York,
outside of all the cities. It's interesting. Right. It's really interesting. How did you get into country music?
I had a guitar teacher who, it was funny because I was a massive Led Zeppelin fan. I was a guitar player. And I would see these pictures of Jimmy Page playing a Les Paul. And I'd watch the song Remains the Same. I go, Jimmy Page, Les Paul. I got to get a Les Paul. And I get a Les Paul. And I go, this doesn't sound anything like I wanted to. And my guitar teacher said, which is my favorite fun fact about rock and roll, he said, you know, all those early Zeppelin records he recorded on a Telecaster. And I go, are you serious? What's a Telecaster? And he handed me a Telecaster. And I said, that's the sound of Jimmy Page.
Yeah, you so were like trying to go after a specific sound that you heard.
It was a sound. So he was like, man, you got to get a Tele. So I sold the Les Paul. I got a Tele, which is right here. I've got a great Tele. And he said, okay, well, now that you've got a Telecaster, you've got to learn like Tele licks, like classic chicken picking country licks. So he would teach me like Brent Mason, Brad Paisley licks, like Albert Lee, Dangan, like all these early guitar players. And then a lot of the great country guitar players were session guys that you would have to find the records where they were playing guitar. So I would try to figure out the guitar licks by tracking the session players through the records. And I started listening to like Emmylou Harris and like Buck Owens and like all these classic early country records. And then through that, I kind of became obsessed with country music. So through the guitar playing, I guess, which is weird because none of my friends were into it.
Well, that was my next question I was going to say. It's like, so when you did start listening to country, did some of your friends go like, oh, wow, this is interesting, I'm in? Or all of them just like, dude, what are you doing?
Well, so here's the thing. So I was a total, I wasn't really an outcast, but I was musically an outcast. Like none of my friends listened to country. They thought I was so weird. We'd be driving. They would want to like, you know, I'd want to put on like Luke Bryan or whatever. And they'd be like, what even is this? And then when the first Casey Musgraves record came out, that kind of broke the barrier. And for some reason, all of my friends started listening to that record and loving that record. And then all of a sudden, like country for a second was kind of cool for me.
Yeah.
Like they were like, Zach, do you know this Casey Musgraves song? And I was like, duh, like Follow Your Arrow. I was like, obviously, like you guys are late to the party on this.
Yeah,
so that kind of won.
That's a great point. That album did bring a lot of people into country music that were like traditional country music fans.
Right, absolutely. So there, and they still, I go home, and it's funny because I go home and someone saw a photo on my Instagram where I was interviewing Dan Shea at the CMA Radio Remotes last year. And they were like, who is that? And I was like, are you joking? Like they sold out Madison Square Garden. I was like, it's Dan and Shay. And they were like, who? And I was like, Tequila? And they were like, oh, I think I know that song. I was like, that is so weird to me. Like,
it's the country fan base is massive and they're ticket buyers and they show up and they like to party and they're loyal. Oh, yeah. And I think that's what's amazing about country. And you know, if you look at like even just America, it's like there's so much like rural America and country and farmland that, you know, I mean, it's growing up in a small town in the South, I thought that was country until obviously I started traveling and I'm like, wow, like, I mean, really most of America is like kind of country music in a sense, you know, Americana music. It sounds like that. And it's about that lifestyle. So you might have a different, like the accent throws people off, obviously, but other than the accent, like they're really just, what I loved was the relatability of just like life, that style and that lifestyle and the way people live and grow up and the values and that kind of thing. But I will tell you also, Luke always told me like growing up, he loved country. Obviously he listened to everything. I listened to everything too. And that's one thing that we really connected over was, like 90s and 2000 rap R&B. And country. Those are our two loves. And but he said that he would play like a country song for like his friends, or like the other day he was talking about Tracy Byrd or something, like for his girlfriend. He was like, oh my god, listen to this song. And she was just like, I don't get it, this is so weird, why are you listening to this music? So it's kind of the same thing that you went through. It was like he was thought he had just discovered the best thing ever and was like, you're gonna love this song, and play for his friends, and they were like, dude, what is this?
Yeah, what is this? But there's something weird about music that almost my friends being like, dude, what is this? Almost made me double down on it. Like it almost
You were the one. Like, you had the, I feel like it's like you have this secret knowledge, or you have this knowledge about something they don't. All of a sudden, it's
that's
like,
totally. Yeah.
Yeah. I know about this and you don't. Even if you don't like it, you're kind of intrigued because I know about this whole side of things you don't know about.
Totally. It's like, it's totally my thing. And it's funny because I was talking to someone yesterday that said he was talking with his girlfriend about the top records, that the top best-selling records ever. And he said he was curious. So we looked up a list and he saw Garth Brooks had like several of the top spots. And he was like, I never even heard of Garth Brooks. And I was like, that is insane to me. But there you go.
Yeah, I would say Garth Brooks is definitely one of them. That's what turned country for me. Like, Luke always liked certain, Luke liked country, but he liked everything. I listened to everything growing up, but that's when we both really got into country. I mean, he definitely brought so many people into country music. And for both of us, it was a big turning point to where we both really genuinely started like listening, finding other music, and we're big fans. And what's ironic is, so I'm in our office on Music Row right now, and the three buildings this way on Music Row are all Garth's. And in the farthest building from here is the studio where he made all his records.
Unbelievable. I know.
Isn't that weird?
That's the coolest thing. I love, that's my favorite place to jog is Music Row, because I freak out about the buildings and everything, and I'll like, I love the history of Music Row.
I do too. I love the vibe of it. I just love the houses. I love everything about it. Like, Luke and I's dream was like, oh my gosh, you think we'll have a house on Music Row one day? You know, now we have two offices on Music Row, and every single day we pull in, we both get excited. We're both like, we have an office on Music Row. Like, we just love it so much. It has like, it's just special, and no, there's no other place like it. I mean, literally no other place in the world that's like Music Row. And so it just feels special. And I feel really, really, I still every day feel really grateful that I get to like work in music and that I get to work here. And I don't know. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, I promise we keep that an hour. Beth, thank you so much for taking the time. This was so fun. I've seen you from afar many a times at Fenwick's.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, you should come say hi next time.
Next time I will say hi.
Breakfast meetings at Fenwick's. I was there like two or three mornings. Obviously, I haven't been in a long time.
Right.
With everything going on, but I love their breakfast.
It's my favorite. It's hard to find a good breakfast that compares to like a New York breakfast, and
no,
Fenwick's is the
listen.
Closest thing. It's real.
I totally agree with you. I have to say, like, because Luke and I love New York. We love New York diners, and we do not have one of those in Nashville.
No, we really don't.
It's the closest, but it's still like cool hipster diner, and the food's really great. You know, the best thing about Fenwick's, I think, is the bacon.
The bacon is incredible there. When my brother came to town last year, we went to Fenwick's, and I was like, you have to get the bacon, because the bacon is incredible. I think it's Benton's bacon, isn't it?
Oh, like, probably. That would make sense. But
it is
honestly,
so
like,
good.
I think I'm like hilarious when I say that, but I'm like, you know what the best thing about Fenwick's is? The bacon. They're like, what? I'm like, no. It's really great.
Make fun of me. It's so good. And people used to make fun of me because New York knows how to make toast. I don't know what this is. New York knows how to toast bread. Nashville does not know how to make toast. It's always soggy. It's never crunchy.
Oh,
like just
you
toast
know what?
The darn thing.
They always put too much, they like soak it in butter.
Yeah.
But they don't do it. I agree with you because I hate soggy toast. And I like everything crispy. Even there, they make fun of me because with the bacon, I say like extra, extra crispy, like burnt, basically. I want everything crispy. But I'm with you on Fenwick's is the best, but I like, Luke and I still wish we had like a New York diner here. Now, Nashville feels like it, but you know Nashville that used to be over here on Music Row, everybody used to do their meetings at Nashville.
That was before
forever.
My time, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, that was like the place every music business person was in there. But the food is fine. It's not New York diner food. We need, you can help with this.
See, this is the kind of thing where I wish my passion was opening up a diner, because I feel like I could open up like a great New York diner
here. Yeah, but why don't you just find a friend who's really good at this and who has restaurants come down, show them where it needs to be, tell them what needs to happen. Do, you can pick a playlist. You can help them decorate because you'll know exactly like a New York diner is what it needs to look like. And then I'll tell everybody on Music Row.
That's the place. Okay, we'll talk. The diner and the, I feel like the good pastrami sandwich, like the classic deli, I feel like Nashvillians would love a good pastrami sandwich on.
I agree. The only place that has those types of sandwiches is, oh my God, I can't think of it right now. It's in East Nashville. It's called, you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. To me, it doesn't, I've been there. I can picture it. I know what you're talking about.
It's really good, but it's the closest.
It's the closest.
It's the closest. Yeah. That's but it. I think like you could for sure do this. So Luke and
we
can
go into Edge Hill. Like Edge Hill is no longer there. If
okay.
I remember correctly.
So
we'll go into Edge Hill.
Well, we would walk to Edge Hill. Like we right. can walk there. The amount of money my staff has spent in T&E at Edge Hill. We were there every morning, every afternoon, all, you know, if you just needed to get out, you could walk down there and do a meeting. I actually looked at the ownership because everybody started telling me, because we were all there so much, they're like, you should look at like
just buy
buying this and opening it, which by the way, now there's like a burger shop in there, but it's super sad because the old Edge Hill, before they moved around the corner, was the perfect, like just little coffee shop. And for meetings, and we don't even have that. So that's why your diner would
my
work.
Diner idea. I'm trying. I've been doing it all wrong. I've been trying to make it in the music industry. Now I gotta go into the diner space. There you go.
But you're
really quick.
All your music business people would be there.
That would be the secret. That would be like the way to get in. There. That's okay. Before I let you run, I know you're such a big reader. Any book recommendations, just off the top of your head, that you always recommend?
I'm going to tell you this. I am a big business book reader, but recently, to be honest with you, I haven't been reading because I'm really obsessed with podcasts right now.
Okay, same. Okay, we could switch the question to podcasts.
Yeah, because I'm having a hard time going back and reading, which actually I hate. And I just ordered books this week because I want to get back into it. But I'm so obsessed with being able to like drive and walk around and do things and listen that the thought of sitting and reading has been like harder for me. I'm obsessed with Armchair Expert.
Yep. Classic.
Like obsessed. I love it so much. And I always learn something. And so that's the one that I've just been like binging the most. But I would say just off the top of my head, a book that I read a while back that I thought was super simple and a super fast read, but really good, is Rework.
Okay.
Rework. It's older. It's simple. I mean, you could read it super quick. There's another one that is a parable about mice that's super old that you can read in an hour called Who Moved My Cheese? Do you know this book?
I've never heard of this book.
Okay.
Who Moved My Cheese?
I did a whole Creative Nation workshop around just this book. It is the metaphor of the music business. You have to read it. It's called Who Moved My Cheese.
I'm going to order it right now. Who Moved My Cheese? Okay. Yeah.
Literally just a parable about mice. It'll take you 1 hour to read it and it will say all you need to know about the music business. And it'll just explain, like it just basically explains like you're this type or this type. And then we broke it all down in a big workshop with my business coach and kind of went through, you know, kind of what do you tend to be? Where could you fall? And it's really interesting.
Okay, I'm going to read it.
And then I just need to know, what is your favorite podcast right now?
Okay, my favorite podcast host, which I always get a big eye roll from this, but you have to listen to this podcast because he's an incredible interviewer, is the Bob Lefsetz podcast.
Oh, okay. So I'm glad you said this because I used to always read all his stuff.
Of course.
And you know, I can take it with a, I mean, I like it, you know, but, I've never listened to the podcast.
I think he's maybe not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he is an incredible interviewer and he always has really interesting guests. And he is so knowledgeable about the music industry.
Yeah.
And I love hearing him talk about the industry. With like he just had Jack Holzman on last week, the founder of Elektra, and he was talking, like, I love hearing him banter with like industry legends. He had like Seymour Stein on for it. Like, he is so, and I personally love his energy. Like, it's so much energy and he gets so excited.
Okay.
And he asks great questions. I love his interview.
I'm so excited you told me this, because I love when people ask great questions, and I really appreciate them, which, by the way, you really do ask great questions, and not the same old, same old, which I appreciate.
Thank you so much.
But I'm gonna listen to this, because now I'm excited that there's another podcast I can go kind of like dive into. Can I ask one more question? I
know. Please, yes.
I need to know, are you binging any TV shows? Like, what is a TV show right now that you're into?
Okay, so I just finished The Spy, Sacha Baron Cohen, which I was a little late to the party on.
I don't know that one.
Incredible show, 6 episodes. It's about this Israeli spy who went into Palestine, I think, and spent years under... It's a true story.
Oh, wow. I would love that.
He spent... It was incredible. Sacha Baron Cohen was amazing in it. He spent years undercover, basically feeding intelligence to Israel, which ended up like saving Israel. Like, incredible story. 6 episodes. I watched it in 2 days, and incredible show. Fauda, I just finished on Netflix, which is, for some reason, I've been watching like Middle East shows, but
you're like into all these shows that I've never heard of.
Fauda on Netflix. So if you like suspense, if you like drama.
Yes.
Incredible. The first episode is so special. It is so suspenseful. They keep the suspense going for 3 seasons, 4 seasons coming.
Okay. Will you send me an email with
I will definitely send you an email.
Okay. Because these are ones I haven't heard of. So I want to look them up. Because I love suspense ones. Like, my favorites of all time are like, you know, Breaking Bad and Bloodline and Mad Men. And so I love that kind of thing.
Okay, I'm definitely going to send you. And then literally 2 nights ago, I started Schitt's Creek because it won all the Emmys.
Okay. I love that.
I'm five episodes in.
I love it. I will also tell you, like, I can be honest and say that there's some episodes that I thought were not that funny. So there are moments. But if you just can stick with the whole thing, the characters are so ridiculous in the best way, you know, and like the most extreme. I think I really liked it. But I have to say, like, my favorite of all time and Luke's favorite of all time, that every night if we're just tired and we need to like throw something on, will always be The Office.
You know, I never got into The Office. I've seen a million episodes.
What?
I know.
Did you really try?
That's what everyone says to me. Everyone says, but did you really try? Everyone says to me. I want to say the answer is yes, but I don't know.
How many did you watch?
I've seen probably 20 episodes of The Office.
Okay, you tried. I don't understand. It is the best of the best.
No, I'm the problem. I'm aware. Like,
why? You don't like the humor?
It's weird because I feel like that is my humor. Like, I feel like I should like it, but there's something about the dynamic or the characters that I just find it kind of, it just doesn't connect with me. I love The Comeback, HBO, which was sort of in that style.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Kudrow, which to me is sort of similar. I love that show. Wait, really quickly, tell me what you're binging right now.
Like TV?
TV, yeah.
Well, I haven't really had a lot of time to watch TV, but the one thing that I'm about, like, I haven't seen the last season and I'm dying, but Luke and I watch it together and he can't stay awake at night. And so we haven't been able to watch it because it's an hour. So we're both kind of like, we want to watch it, but we had to find the time, is Ozark.
I'm 2 seasons into Ozark.
Me too. So I haven't seen the third one, and all my friends
say it's the best season.
Yes, they're off. So I'm like, it's sitting here. Everyone's saying it's the best season. We know this, but it's like between work and the kids and everything, like an hour of TV, sometimes it's hard to like pay attention and stay awake for.
I'm literally in the middle of season 2 and I have to get to season 3, and everyone I know says season 3 is the best season. That's
I know,
so
and
funny.
Then they all go, oh, well, you know, Ozark and this, and like, no. Stop talking. I haven't seen it. And then they get mad at me because they're like, okay, now you can't do this forever. Like, just watch the freaking season. And then the other thing all my friends are obsessed with is Yellowstone. It's all I hear about all the time.
Same. I haven't started yet, but same. Everyone's talking about Yellowstone.
I gotta watch it. Yeah, me too.
I will send you my recommendations.
Please. Beth,
thank you so much. This was so fun. Can't wait to see you at Fenwick's. So nice to meet you too.
I'll send you some bacon at Fenwick's.
So, yes, unbelievable. Talk to you soon. Be well.
Okay, bye.
There you have it, episode 28, Beth Laird. By the way, the first thing I did after this episode was I ordered Who Moved My Cheese on Amazon, got the next day and read it in about an hour. And you got to read this book, Who Moved My Cheese. Check it out. You can get it on Amazon. Highly recommend it. Thanks again, Beth, for coming on, and I hope we get the chance to talk again soon. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content, you can subscribe to my newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Bye.